Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast, I'm walking back to the mic.
We're in the big studio.
In the big studio. Brian here, he couldn't make it. He had to get home, deal with them chilling.
One chilling. The boy went back to school.
The boy back in school. I guess they're about in their second week down in college.
Yeah.
And the little girl's getting ready for school next week. Wait, I didn't say the date. It's the 30th.
Yes.
That's because I knew, because Mbakwe, the wedding is September 1st.
Yeah.
So I just counted backwards. I kind of semi-cheated. But how's everybody, well, how's everybody? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm just ready for this weather to break. I mean, I understand it's August in
this
New
week
York,
was nuts.
But it had like, it got nice and mild.
Yeah, and then it got crazy.
And then we crunked back up into a straight, full-on heat wave.
Blazing. It's the second time this summer, only because I hate air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
It's the second time this summer I actually was like, I got to put it on.
Really? Yeah, why do you hate air conditioning?
I hate fake air. I hate, you know what I mean? Like, I obviously, like, heat. In buildings, like, the central is whatever, but, like
something
air conditioning.
On you?
Yeah, I don't like that.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, but that was like.
I think I've turned my air conditioner off twice since, like, off. June. Like, all of it. Well, I have two settings, right? So, I have one setting that's full air conditioner. I have another setting that just pulls the humidity out.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
A lot of times I use that instead of, like, the
instead
full
AC.
Instead of the full AC.
Because it takes the dampness out of the air.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was in Atlanta, for, like, 9 days I was down there. When I got back on Tuesday, it was hotter here than Atlanta. Like, that I got off the plane, like, damn!
That don't make no sense.
This shit is like an oven. I mean, Atlanta was warm, right. But it wasn't like, this shit was crazy.
Yeah, so we're taping late, and I just walked in. It's dark outside, and it's still hot.
Yeah, it's hot. No, it's hot. Yeah,
it's like legit hot.
Shorts, t-shirt, like.
Yeah, like,
I saw
there's not a breeze. Like, there's none of that.
I saw a white guy with a hoodie on earlier. I was like, where you going? Where you going? It's like 93. Where you going?
Gotta be so uncomfortable. So yeah, that's how I'm doing.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're gonna cool off.
Yeah.
We're gonna bring it down. We didn't tape last week, as people know, so we're just gonna run through a couple of things. Not long. We just will do some mentions since we missed them last week.
Right.
And then we'll get into the meat and potatoes of this week here, which is plenty.
Yes.
So I wanted to just give a quick shout out of love to Married to the Medicines.
Because they're coming back.
It's coming back on Sunday.
Right.
I'm so geeked. Like, I am geeked. Like, I cannot wait. Sunday night, I ain't, leave me alone. Like, from 9 to 10 or whatever they come on.
That's really you and Sean's shit.
That's my shit. Because, like I said, I think I said it on the show, because, like, look, the other reality shows, like, you know, we talk about some of them that we still keep up with. Like, you know, Real Housewives of Potomac and, you know, I don't really watch Love and Hip Hop that much no more. Peace Among Them Entertainment.
But Peace Among Them Entertainment.
Yeah, but you know, I don't. But the thing about Married to the Medicines.
I do still watch Chicago Inc. though, because they're stupid.
I'll check in and out of that. I'm not consistent. I kind of watch the New York one more, which is also stupid.
Right.
But the thing about the Married to the Medicines is like, and I think I said this before, it's like, these are like your cousins, or if you're young enough, like your aunts. For us, it would be our cousins.
Right.
Who like, just like us, like, went to college.
Right.
Pledged.
It's not the like, ratchet shit.
No, they like professionals. They got money. But then you're seeing, like, so, like, they're the cousins, like, when you go down to Atlanta, it's like, oh, I stayed at Simone's Cecil House. Yeah, house is nice. It got, Simone got the Maserati, and it looks great.
Right.
But then this show shows behind all of that.
Right.
It's deep-rooted issues, even with them.
Right.
But to me, a lot of the issues that they deal with on this show are very relatable.
Right.
It's not like throwing water at somebody or just, the Real Housewives of Atlanta. Just, and it's not always like, oh, we're just going to brunch today and blah, blah, blah. Like, they're working. what I'm saying? They have jobs for real. Like, real life. I got an office. Right. I got a baby to deliver. Like, I can't be fucking around with y'all on a Wednesday afternoon.
That's fair.
Yo, so, but that's the, you know, so peace to them because they coming back.
Well, since you're shouting out your drama for coming back, I want to say please. shout out to Owen and Greenleaf.
Oh, yeah, this week, right?
Yeah, it came back last, what's today? Thursday? So Monday and Tuesday. Tuesday and Wednesday, they did two. How was back. It? It's good. I love Greenleaf because it's good. It's a good, messy church soap opera. And, you know, church mess is good mess.
Good mess.
But it doesn't descend quite so far as to be straight ratchet.
Okay.
But it's good. It's good mess. It's really good mess. So I enjoy it. And Lynn Whitfield is a good dramatic first lady. Okay. So yeah, it's good. It's good and messy. I appreciate the messiness of it.
Okay.
It ain't even really realistic, but it's good. And maybe it is, but it's good. It's definitely like over dramatized.
Well, of course, but keeps you like locked in.
Yeah.
Then I want to say peace to, yo. So I'm in Atlanta. I go to my barber. You know the barber I cheated on old Herb with.
Right.
The younger guy. I go to the shop. The shit is one nigga left.
Word.
I was like,
what? That's what you get for going to the fly young shit.
What the fuck happened to the other six niggas that was there? That shot was like cranking.
So what did happen?
Of course the one nigga didn't tell me. Oh. He wouldn't say. He probably was the cause of the shit.
Got warrants and shit.
like stuff off the wall. Like, oh, they are, wow. They're gone. It ain't like, oh, they weren't going, they was going
so there. So the one dude left is the owner?
I don't think he owns that shop, but I think I always felt like he was one of them niggas like, who kind of like, claim himself to be the manager, even though he ain't really the manager, right. But he the one probably running back telling the owner everything, you know, and all that bullshit. Yeah, man, so I was hurt, man, so like, I went to Killer Mike's barbershop.
Oh.
As a replacement.
And how was that?
It's a nice shop. It's not that big, so mm-hmm. It's cool. It's only like four barbers? Five? Okay. It's small. It's like not big. It's right on Edgewood.
Okay.
Well kept, very clean. You know, they on point. They got the game on. Da da da. But the dude who cut my hair, I'm sorry.
They hitting you over there with
see, my hair is kind of funny because, like, I keep it low as people don't know, but you see. I keep it pretty low. But it grows pretty quick.
Okay.
So if I don't get it cut, like, really, really low, if a guy just kind of goes over it a little bit, in a day or two, it looks like I didn't get a haircut.
Okay.
So, like, I got to go to my Mexican barber. He knows it. Like I told you, I just sit in the chair.
Yeah.
He's like, same thing?
Because you
same
don't know blades, you don't know none of that.
I don't know nothing. Same thing.
Right.
And we don't talk because he doesn't speak English well. And so we sit there. I've made a new friend, though, Tracy. Peace to Tracy. She's the lesbian gal who sits in the first chair.
Okay.
Who's very nice. Okay. Got grandkids. She one of them, like, mean, loving grandmothers.
Okay.
Sit your ass down somewhere. But right. They'll be hugging.
What we love. Yes. Yeah, okay. So.
But anyways, that's enough of that bullshit.
But that's what you get for leaving the older barber and going for the fly young barber.
I should have just went back to her.
That's what you get.
I'm going to have to go back.
You're going to have to go back to Herb. You're going to have to bring him some beer or a bottle of something.
Or just lie and say ain't been down there.
Whatever. You're going to fuck up because you're going to be like, yeah, when I was down here last month, You're gonna fuck it up.
I'm sorry, Herb.
I should have stayed in place. That's what you did.
This one's for you.
Okay.
Something else that we missed last week. Peace to Tevin Campbell.
Yes.
Who got a boost based on Lovey, is what you said her name?
Yeah.
So Lovey is a podcaster and a writer
yeah.
And now does a podcast. She has her own, but she also does a podcast with Yvonne Orji.
Yeah.
Joloff, which is really good.
And like a speaker. And Lovey does it. She moves around.
Like an entertainer kind of thing. Like, and very good. Like a Nigerian gal, like very smart, very funny.
Yeah, she's from Chicago.
So she wrote a tweet. When the queen, who we will get into deeper later in the show, passed away, and people on Twitter talking about who should say.
Tribute, yeah.
I would have liked it. We saw the program.
Yeah.
I wish Tevin was singing.
Well, so there were a couple. So the thing about Lovey's tweets is that there was a series of them, right?
I didn't know that.
Before she got to Tevin, she was already kind of on shaky ground, because even I kind of side-eyed a couple of them. And I fuck with Lovey, usually. But I think the background here that's important is that, like you said, Lovey is Nigerian. But obviously, she's been
in the U.S. at least since middle school.
Yeah, like she knows black culture for sure. For Chicago,
there are some people who feel like she considers herself an expert on black American culture and feel a way about it, right? So I guess there's some people who already been kind of feeling
waiting for her to say some slick shit.
So, like, just because you got a show with Shonda, you do, you know, like all this other stuff. So,
wait, she has a show with Shonda?
Yeah, she has a development deal with Shonda to do a TV show.
I didn't know that.
It happened a year ago. I'm not sure where they are in the process.
Okay.
But, and you know, she just put out a New York, was it a New York Times bestseller?
I think it was a bestseller, yeah.
So anyway, so first Lovey gave a list of tributes, and at the end of the list was Adele. And everybody was like,
come on now. And look, peace to Adele. Right. She's dope. But chill out.
Nah. So then, she said,
great gowns, great gowns.
Said, great gowns, beautiful gowns. And I mean, the queen has said that Adele can sing.
She can.
She can sing. But
chill out.
But chill out. So then she gave another list and she was like, absolutely no Mary. And that's when I was like,
come on, B.
Nah, bro.
Now you wildin'.
Like, everybody is so focused on who's got 4-octave ranges, but you need somebody with that soul and that heart.
Bring
and
that, bring that heat.
That's Mary. That's Fantasia, who is singing at the funeral tomorrow. And then she said something else, and she was like, I don't want to see Patty, because if I ain't fuck with you in life, I don't want to see you. And everybody was like, come on, man. Like, how you gonna say that Patty can't be? So there was that. And then, finally, she said, somebody suggested, Tevin, what rock did they pull that name out from
and
under?
They came.
And that's when everybody went off. So what you have to understand is that it was a build-up. So like all day niggas was like, what are you talking about? And then, because a few people were saying that about Mary, and I was like, but Aretha actually like approved Mary covering one of her songs. What are y'all talking about? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
because she understood the soul.
Yeah.
Obviously, she was the queen of soul.
Exactly. And so, when the Tevin thing happened, everybody just went off. And I mean, it exploded. It became like
a 2-day thing, right?
It was a whole thing. And some people were coming at her about like, listen, just sit this one out.
Chill.
Let us like, cause Aretha is like straight up black American culture, period.
No question.
Period. Like, not to say that you can't appreciate her globally. Not to say you can't appreciate her talent.
Of course.
But this little girl from the D who was raised by a fucking minister.
A big pastor.
Huge pastor. Yeah. Growing up in the black church.
Black.
Super black church.
Like Mahalia Jackson used to sing in her church.
These are things that you can understand intellectually, but you don't really get it if you weren't in it. Just like I would never proclaim to understand certain things about Igbo culture.
Of course
no
not.
No matter how many Igbo, you know, Nigerians I know or whatever. So some people were just kind of like, Lovey, it's really okay to sit this one out.
Yeah.
Other people were like more offended because they were like, how dare you, blah, blah, blah. But then it became, it escalated to becoming the diaspora wars. Right? Yeah. Like,
I don't really need to.
It didn't need to be that.
It doesn't have to be black against African.
Yeah.
It's just like, she jumped out the window. She talked about some shit that she thought she was steeped in,
but
I don't think it wasn't quite steeped as she thought she was.
Right.
Like, the marker is this.
She also doubled down on it, which was kind of, like, she never just was like, my bad. She was like, who knew that everybody was so upset about Tevin?
We'll do Aretha, then we'll slide to Tevin real quick.
Yeah.
The marker on Aretha is this. If you don't have anything else, and there's 100 things to have, she sung at Martin Luther King's funeral. That's how deep she goes into
it. And Mahalia's.
That's how deep she goes. So just understand who she is to us.
Right.
Like, she's literally our aunt, our grandmother, our older cousin, everything in one. Now let's slide to Tevin. Which kind of shows me maybe she's not as quite as steep as she was, because if you know anything about Tevin, he comes from the church.
From the church, yeah.
Dead up from the church. It was discovered by, a woman who I used to know, Bobby Humphrey.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you know who Bobby Humphrey is?
I don't think I know
she's
Bobby.
I guess it's called a flautist, the flute player.
Oh, yes. Okay. When I knew that he auditioned for Bobby Humphrey, but I thought that was a man. Okay.
No, it's a woman. Yeah. Okay. And she, because she's from Texas as well.
Right.
And she discovered him and she brought him to Quincy.
She brought him to Benny.
Benny Medina. So Benny was working at Warner Bros. At the time, and Quincy had to deal with Quest.
Yeah.
There, exactly. You're right. So, so his first project was on Quincy Jones' label.
At 14,
he sung Tomorrow, and which was a smash.
Well, like, and then his second single was Round and Round, produced by Prince.
Yeah.
Again, you're 14.
He's a baby. He's
first album
in eighth grade.
Yeah. First album, you're 16. You're produced by album showing Kanye West. Second album, you're produced by Babyface. So you're 18. You've been produced by Quincy Jones. You're signed to Quincy Jones. You've been produced by Quincy, produced by Prince, produced by Albie and Kanye West, who in the 90s were like a massive production team.
And I'm sure and it was around Michael.
Yeah.
Because
of
Quincy.
And produced by Babyface. Like, yeah. I don't know another artist that's been produced by all of them.
This is what I'm saying. Like, so
and
chill
then later
out.
It was produced by the Hitmen. Like, all of it.
Chill out with, like, the Tevin slander. Yeah. And his records still rock.
Still. Right
you know
now.
Yeah. Like, they play Can We Talk pretty much at every party I go to lately. Like, and people still sing rocks. At the top of their lungs.
And he had crazy vocal control, crazy style. Like, amazing. I was watching a clip of him performing Round and Round on Arsenio. He's 14. And, like, full stage control. You got grown-ass people backing you. You got a full band. You got grown background dancers because you got, like, Prince's background people from the time. And, like, 14! Full control.
Killing it. And don't forget he had the Shh record, too.
The Shh record, which was way too grown,
but was hot.
But still.
So, yeah. we're not gonna slander Mr. Campbell. I understand why some artists don't do it, but I kind of wish in his position, he would go on and do this unsung, but I get it. I think he's still very wary about the homosexuality thing.
Of course.
And you know what? I am not...
And that is part of his story. Like, you can't tell his story
without that.
Without the arrest.
And like bro always says, what do you always say? Who am I?
Who are me to
tell him what to do? But like, I wish he would come on out. Because if nothing else, that Lovey thing showed you, they still here for you, bro.
Yeah.
They want to see you. They want to hear you. They want to touch you. But
people
again,
still love him.
They love him. I think he's actually still lives in Dallas. Like, he's in Dallas, like, low-key, you know? So, God bless him. Peace to Janet Jackson, who was in Harlem, I guess, 2 weekends ago
now? Over Harlem week.
Yeah, actually, did I tell you I actually went?
I told you I went. No, you went.
Yeah, I went. Yeah, I went. I was uptown. I went to see Tony and got a haircut. And went to the gym, and then my friend Kia hit me, and she was like, I'm up here. She's about to, and I'm watching her. I'm watching Janet. It was actually, okay, so it was kind of wild, because apparently what happened was Janet, I think she still does have an apartment at the Trump Columbus Circle.
Oh, okay.
She's had it there for years.
So she just hopped on the train.
She jumped on the train. She was on the A train.
With, like, mad security, though.
Like, yeah, of course, mad security, but, like, it was, like, a Saturday at, like, 2:30, 3 o'clock, prime time.
Right.
And took the train uptown. The people on the train are like, what the fuck? That's Janet Jackson.
Right.
They took the train. You know, it's only 8 minutes on the express. Right. She gets uptown because my friend Kia was at the Popeyes. I texted y'all on 25th and St. Nick and was like, I just seen Janet Jackson. Like, oh, at the Popeyes. They went in there, got some food, jumped in the SUVs. There's mad traffic because it's Harlem Week, so traffic's not moving.
Right.
So, everybody's, like, chasing her in the car, like, taking pictures. Apparently, she put the window down, just waving to people.
Right.
You know, and then they kind of got her out of the cars, and I think they did they went under the train again, and they came up 138th Street.
Okay.
And then went into that school, or the school.
That's across the street, yeah.
Across the street, and, like, walked around, and they're showing all this on live.
Right, right.
Like, they're showing her walking and everything. So I jumped on the bus.
Okay.
Because it was raining. And
I remember that, yeah. It was
raining. Jumped on the bus, and I seen her. You know, she, you know, waved and stuff. She's very...
You didn't see her perform. You just went up there.
Yeah, I didn't see her perform. I walked, because it started really raining. I walked away, but I saw her get her proclamation and, you know, waved to the crowd and stuff. And she seemed, you know, chilling.
Mama, like, I do think it's dope, because Janet also is being... The Black Girls Rock taped on Sunday.
And it airs
on the 9th. Okay. And they're honoring Janet for Black Girls Rock.
They honor her tonight at BMI Awards in Atlanta.
Okay. So, I mean, she's in promo mode, but I do think it's also dope that, like, at this stage of Janet's career, mind you, this is a different conversation, but you can argue that maybe she's not as big of a star globally as she was during, like,
the Rhythm Janet Nation and all that other stuff,
right?
She's still Janet Jackson, but
it's dope that she's this accessible at this point in her career, because she really does not have to be.
At all.
So the fact that she was even doing Harlem Week, I thought was just really, like, amazing.
She's obviously, and you know, it's a plan, of course, but she's obviously like, all right, this time I'm going home.
Yeah.
I'm doing all the black shit.
And she never, because the thing is, like, she never really
Not really.
really like
a little thing. Like she would do Soul Train Awards, like the big shit, the BET.
But she would do it when Soul Train Awards was like,
you're like massive. Yeah.
So she definitely was not. She was more accessible than Michael, but not by that much. It was like fake accessible, like how Beyonce is now.
Yeah.
It was like a contrived accessibility. Yeah, like, I want you to believe you know me, but you don't really know me.
Like, you know, she did Poetic Justice, so she, like, would put her foot in it, but then she wouldn't, like I said, she wasn't all the way in it. But, I mean, you know, I'm working with Missy, they're very, very close, and, like, according to Missy, like, behind the scenes, she is a bit more accessible with some of the bigger black artists.
Okay.
Like, she does talk. She stays in touch with a few. Like, right. You know, not a lot, but there's a couple that...
Well, yeah, she shouted out, like, when she was honored at Black Girls Rock. So, Mary's also being honored. Latifah's hosting. So, like, you know, she was like, my sister Mary. And she also shouted out some other people, like, my sister MC Light, my sister
So, saying, like, there's some people she has been talking to over the years.
Right.
Consistently. But I just wanted to say, you know, peace to her, because I love what she's doing. She only has this one song out now. I don't know if this if it's leading to an album or what it's leading to, but I just love seeing her, you know?
Yeah.
And with, you know, obviously her brother not being here, it's nice that to see her. Like, almost like, well, you ain't here, but you know.
And I think that's one of the things that she's realizing, right, is, like, this shit is fleeting.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? And
with her brother gone, with Prince gone, with Whitney gone, you know what I mean?
Now, like, Aretha. And now Aretha.
Yeah. I think if you've been this massive star, there has to be a part of you that realizes, like, oh, yeah, this shit can change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or this shit is not permanent. Let me get out there. Let me, you know.
Yeah, and also I think, like, when you go to, you know, Harlem Week or, like, you know, the Black Girls Rock or, like I said, the BMI Awards in Atlanta, and you get hit with that black love, it's like, oh, yeah, that feels good. You
now, know be saying? Clear, she ain't sent for Black Girls Rock. Her ass definitely stayed backstage and played on her.
But backstage,
it would have been disruptive if she had been in her
And maybe seat, backstage she was talking about it, but, like, just to feel that, I'm sure it feels good. Instead of Harlem Week, she looked very happy.
Yeah.
Like, she waving the whole time, and, you know, the people taking pictures and yelling, and she's like, oh, yeah, I'm with my people. So, peace to her. Couple more quick things. Three finales last week. I won't go deep because we don't have the time. But Queen Sugar finale, which I still
haven't watched past like the third episode of Queen Sugar.
Oh yes, you're way out. So I won't talk about it. But it was interesting because this finale really wrapped, like, are y'all coming back? Like, it really wrapped up. Okay. Like, it was like really a wrap up.
They did get renewed for another season.
You know, I know, but it just really wrapped up, like. It wasn't a lot of cliffhangers. Like they kind of sewed up a lot of stuff. Love Is finale. That nigga's still an asshole. That nigga's an asshole.
I have friends that are like legitimately angry at him, at just his character.
No, he's a fucking asshole. Like, right. He's a horrible nigga. Like, for real, like, he's a horrible nigga. When you binge it, we'll get into it.
I might binge it this weekend since it's a holiday weekend.
He's a horrible nigga. And then Real Housewives of Potomac finale.
Okay. I forgot that was a while.
The reunion.
A minute ago. Oh yeah, the reunion.
It was last weekend. Was the last one. Wasn't a lot of fireworks from what I remember on the second.
Isn't there supposed to be another part of the reunion?
No, it was only two. They did two.
Oh, I didn't watch Sundays. Right, I haven't watched Sundays yet. So they I'm behind. Did two.
Yeah. So, you know. It was cool. It was a good season. I mean, but
it was
alright. A lot of storylines kind of dragged on.
Like
a little
halfway
too
through,
long.
I was like,
yeah, they, a lot of the story. So many storylines dragged on a little too long. Last thing, one quick thing. I kind of gotta say it. I wish Bro was here. You might get tight. Take a piece to Omarosa, B.
I don't know why. It's still Omarosa.
I'm not saying.
But also, she's been out of the news cycle for the past week.
Well, because it got dumb again on this Trump wilding.
Right, but also, I don't think she had anything past the day her book dropped.
It went number one.
Her book went number one. Of course, it went number one.
Yeah.
But think about it. Out of all these videos she leaked, was
tapes?
Out of all the tapes she leaked, was anything really damaging?
Not really.
She put the Trump team on the ropes just because they don't know what she has and because she's the first person willing to play dirty.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I appreciate watching that. But some people are like, oh, Omarosa was playing a long con all along. No, she wasn't. This was her backup to protect her own ass.
Of course.
If she could still be in the White House, she would still be in the White House.
I agree. And, like, I'm not saying she's, as they like to say, I'm not welcoming her back to the cookout.
Right.
But I have really enjoyed her media appearances. I've enjoyed watching her.
I haven't watched her on any media appearances.
You should watch. The one that was really good, if you feel like it, is watch. Last week, she did AM Joy.
Uh-huh.
And that was really good because it was like they were sparring. Like, you know, because Joy is sharp as fuck. Right, you know what I'm saying? Like, and she's asking all the questions, and Omarosa's like, you know, giving it back. But it never got contentious. It was like, you know, it was a little testy at times, but it never
was. Because Omarosa does that nice, nasty thing.
But it wasn't really, she wasn't really being that nasty.
Okay.
Really? Like, a couple little things were not that bad. I think she actually kind of respects Joy.
Okay.
Because I usually see her go way more ham on white women. Like, she'll turn up on a white woman if I say.
Right.
But it was just very good how they went back and forth. And by the end, Joy was like, they were both like, it was like a fight. Like, all right, that was good. Right, like, that was a good one, you know? But I've just enjoyed her just watching. She's obviously, like, you know, she's obviously a very intelligent woman, very cunning and savvy, and, you know, has
manipulative
and has some really great media training, and she's great on television.
Yeah.
I just enjoy watching, like, somebody at their peak do their thing. She's just doing her thing. Okay. I'm like, oh, she really, like, rocking this shit. But I'm not saying I'm gonna give her a plate. Maybe a plate to go.
No. She can't get shit from me.
Because they had Kwame Jackson and Randall, I can't call this a Pinkett, from The Apprentice, the other black ones.
Okay,
and there's a black woman, too, who's always on AM Joy. I'm sorry, I'm blanking her name. And they came on after. And they all basically was like, yeah, whatever, nigga.
Yeah, fuck
like,
her.
Yo, remember you from The Apprentice. You was on that fuck shit.
Yeah.
Like, and I ain't buying this new fucking, you know, game you're trying to play. So.
Right.
Whatever. So let's talk real quick about Nicki Minaj.
Meltdown.
The meltdown from about a week ago, right? Well, week and a half.
Yeah, I mean, it's been since the album came out.
Yeah.
Basically.
So her album came out. It came in number two behind Travis Scott.
Behind Travis Scott in his second week.
In his second week, exactly. Travis Scott's second week, first week he did like 500 and change.
Yeah.
Second week he did 225, I believe it was. And Nicki did 190. And she was...
And she blamed every single person.
Everybody.
In the world.
For not having...
Except herself.
Exactly. For not having the number one album.
She
claimed Travis Scott.
She blamed the baby.
To be a Suri. She blamed Kylie.
No, she blamed Stormy.
Stormy. She blamed Kylie. She blamed Universal.
Yeah.
She blamed, obviously, Travis.
She blamed everybody.
She a little kind of like undershots at Drake. Just a little bit of everything except herself. She has this show now, Queen Radio, and she goes on there
and just
goes bonkers for like an hour and change every other day. And then she did the MTV Awards. She did the Chun-Li. Her performances like throughout this whole course of this ramp up just haven't been great to me.
Her performance on BT, because she also did Dreams, and I mean on MTV. Her
performance
on the VMAs wasn't bad, but it was also skewed in her favor because she did a pre-tape and it was all her fans.
Yes.
So she was getting the energy.
Yeah, from the barbs.
Yeah, from all the barbs. They were like singing along to the lyrics and giving her all that shit. So I could see her kind of feeding off of that.
Yeah.
So that was cool, but it's like, ma, you ain't changed your shtick. There's been no evolution in Nicki.
None.
Zero.
None.
And so her entire career has been none.
Yeah. That's what
you're doing the same shit. You're rapping the same style. You're talking about the same shit. You're dressing the same way. Like, it's too much.
Yep. And that's what people, as remember, she had the beef with the woman on Twitter who basically said that.
Yeah.
And that's what people have been kind of saying, like, yes, you are very talented. You can rap your ass off. You know, you're a very good looking woman, you know, although the surgery's got you looking kind of kooky, but like, but all that being said, like, there's no growth.
There's no growth.
So, like, why would I listen to this album more than once? Just, you know, just say I listen to it.
Right.
So.
I mean, and the barbs are still diehard for her. God bless them. But they're just, they're stupid.
Now there's issues with her tour.
Right. So she had to cancel her and Future's tour.
In the States. She's still going on overseas.
Right.
God bless. I hope that goes well. I don't know. Future pulled out of the North American leg. I don't know who's going to replace him on that. That's not even supposed to happen until, like, 19.
Right.
Like May of 19. So who knows? Like if your ticket sales are not popping as your album is coming, you've got all this press and heat on you.
Right.
What are they going to be what's in 8 months?
Driver. Yeah. Yeah.
Who's going to see you in 8 months? Like, I don't.
And it's quiet for her already. I mean, she and Ye are having a bit of a reckoning this year. And I'm here for it.
So did you watch this Ye interview?
No. I saw the quotes.
Okay.
Shout out to John Monopoly.
You should watch the interview, though. Just because. Because
then he started crying and some shit. I don't know.
Yeah, he definitely started crying. Okay. Why did he do that?
Because I don't.
So he's back home, literally, in Chicago.
Yep. Working, and with his first manager.
Working with the first manager and all the guys who were there at the beginning, which is Bumpy J, GLC, Ready Doe, mm-hmm. His boy Eben, who's always been around. And apparently he reveals in his GCI interview that Don C had even bounced.
Right. Yeah, none of his friends were fucking with him.
Yeah, Don C had even bounced. So on the radio interview, he says, he talks about the TMZ thing, and he mm-hmm. says, like, you know, that part I have to give him was very introspective, because he said, I got around a lot of people who were just looking at me as a corporation right. and just a way to make money off of me. And they didn't have any of my personal interests at heart. It was just about get money, get money, get money, use my name, get money, get money. And when I went to TMZ, he specifically said, if Don C was there, that wouldn't have happened.
Right.
And he said that I'm in Chicago, and he said, Don C's in town. And that's when he starts to get choked up. And right. he says, I called him, I told him I need him because, like, if he was around me, none of this would have happened.
Right.
And first of all, I didn't know Don C wasn't around him like that no more. And you could tell he was kind of, like, for that little, you know, I don't know what he
maybe
was
that thinking. Moment was real.
That's what second, yeah, no, it was very real. Because yeah. you could tell, he had the, this is what I took it as. I'm glad Brian here because he would be giving me the gas face right now. But, like, I took it as he was looking at, he was kind of like, for that split second, he was like, how did I get here?
Right.
Like, that's what he was looking like. And, like, I thought that I would be with my boys. We'd be getting money. We'd be having a blast. How
but did it's his own fault.
He doesn't deny. He right. didn't, in that interview anyway, he wasn't blaming other people.
Right, right. But that's what I'm saying. Like, the thing about, we all been saying that Kanye didn't have the right people around him. And Kanye, like, the last manager who tried to work with Kanye was Scooter Braun.
Mm-hmm.
And he fired Scooter. Mm-hmm. Or Scooter left.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
One or the other.
Yeah, probably
right?
a combo of the two.
Probably a combo of the two, both of them being like, nah. And Kanye, the problem with Kanye is that Kanye's first thought is to do shit to get attention.
Yeah.
Not do shit that's really artistry. He thinks he thinks it's on his fake ass Andy Kaufman shit or whatever. Like his first thing is like shock and awe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's been driving him this whole last cycle.
Yeah.
And it's a problem. But my question is, like, I do believe there's probably a part of Kanye who's having a bit of an awakening and saying, yo, I got a bunch. Because the nigga is 40, and he's been hanging out with a bunch of 24-year-olds from Calabasas.
Or even younger.
Who just keep telling him he's a genius. Instead of real niggas being like, my nigga, bruh, what are you talking about?
What are you
about?
Doing? What are you wearing, like, nigga? Like, nigga, you're ashy. Like,
yeah.
what the fuck is
like
going
his,
on?
Like, his
you got
real
fat,
friends,
nigga. What is going on?
Like, you just wore slides to somebody's wedding. What the fuck is wrong with you? Like, and they were too small. The fuck?
Yeah.
Like, there's, so we all knew he didn't have real, and people have been like, yo, his real friends ain't checking him. And I've been like, please don't think that just because people aren't publicly speaking out against him, like, I had to defend John a couple times. Like, please don't think that John is, like, out here hanging out with Kanye.
Yeah.
Like, please be clear. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to turn his back
on
him
man.
Publicly.
He's not going to shit on him, but it's like, nigga, you wild, and I got to give you some time out.
Yeah, like, so, you know, I'm happy that he's around John. I'm happy that he listened, because I'm sure this was John's idea, like, you need to
Monopoly, and the first radio station you need to go to is
home.
GCI.
You need to go home.
Yeah, go home.
So, I'm glad he's listening, but let's see how long he listens.
Yeah. That's
you know what I mean? Because I actually do not believe Kanye is manageable anymore.
You know what? I'm not going to debate that. I'm just going to wish for the best, but I'm probably agreeing with you on that.
Yeah.
But, like I said, it was just a couple of moments where he definitely just felt, he was very, he wasn't the brash, you know,
right.
Breakfast Club guy. And, you know, but it wasn't like ultra dark super depressed guy either. It was this kind of like introspective guy. Yeah. And I mean, being home.
He was still saying some dumb shit though.
He did say some dumb shit. The Trump shit was trash.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But,
cause he's still just ignorant.
Yeah.
Which you
know,
is a problem.
You know what's interesting? So a couple of days ago, I think when I was on a plane and I listened to Watch the Throne, I hadn't listened to it in a while. And like listening to the stuff him and Hove were talking about on there, like, you know, black excellence and like black empowerment, how right. he's talking about, you know, the violence in Chicago and like that, such a black album. And then to see him now, it's like, you know, I mean, it wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't.
Like, damn, bro, like, what the fuck happened?
But again,
man?
None of your people around you, Hove ain't fucking with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
none of your.
Yeah.
The only person fucking with you right now is like Cuddy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think Cuddy's in a position to tell him shit.
Right.
You know? A couple other things he said, which were interesting. He talked about.
I wonder if him and Ron Fest talked.
He talked about Fest.
What did he say?
He said, because they asked him about the whole thing with him and Kim. And
yeah.
He was like, you know, Fess, I look at Fess as a brother, and I gave him a job. He said, you know, I gave my brother a job. Maybe he wasn't the person for that job, but he didn't speak ill of him.
Okay.
He said, Ryan Fess wrote on his last album. Mm. He said he gave me those rhymes for this. I forget what song it was. He gave me the rhyme for the song. Like, so, like, that's still my man. We just have to, you know, figure it out.
Okay.
And then he talked about, it was almost like a midlife crisis thing, because he was like, you know, I'm in competition now with Virgil, because he brought the Off-White thing up like more than once. Right. So he's definitely like in awe, like, holy shit. Like,
except you're not in competition with Virgil. He's lapping you.
Yeah.
Y'all ain't even in the same category.
And that's kind of what it felt like. He was right. Almost kind of saying like, I can't keep up with this nigga. Like, he yeah. really taken what I saw, and he's run so far down the road
right.
and he's doing so much, and like, I can't keep up. And then he's like, then I got Drake over here and he's fucking killing it on music.
Right.
And like, he's like, yo, I come to Chicago. I hear like three or four Drake songs in an hour and I don't hear none of mine. Like, so he's also, it's all like also coming down on him. Like, what am I going
to
do?
Because, nigga, it's time for you to pass the baton.
Yeah.
Like, you should, like, that's the problem. The problem is that you are an artist, the same problem Nicki's having. You should not be an artist who's been in the game as long as you have, who has seen as much as you had at the age you're out, and trying to compete with 30-year-olds.
Yeah, you can't.
Like, Nicki's trying to compete with a 24-year-old.
Yeah.
And Kanye's trying to compete with a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
And you can't.
You can't.
Like you in a different sector now, my nigga. Figure that out. I don't know what that space is.
Yeah.
But find it.
Yeah, find it.
And it might look different for you commercially. It just might.
It will. And that's cool. Because you can do other things and, you
shit,
know.
Shit, Hov and Beyonce dropped that shit. That shit was number two. They kept it moving.
And now they made, I think, last thing I saw, they made, they've doubled the projections on this tour. So right. As of now, as the last time I looked, it was 150 million.
That's insane.
And they still had 19 dates to go.
That's insane.
So you say this tour could end up grossing 250 million.
That's insane. Insane.
And you know what? Like I keep saying, the Everything Is Love is what, that's Watch the Throne too.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be Ye and Jay doing this.
But yeah, it's just him and Nicki Minaj. You're trying too hard. Your shit comes off as inauthentic.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nicki is clearly unmanageable. Like, I know G is out there. I don't know. G done probably checked the fuck out. He has to have.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Because he's such a good dude. Like, I feel bad for him. He's such a good dude.
Can you imagine having to hear that every day?
Oh, my God.
Every first thing in the morning, that phone's ringing. And she's, bah!
Who's going to do something about this, Dad? Oh, my God.
Fuck that, Dad.
Oh, my God.
So.
Anyway.
Do you have anything to say about John McCain?
So, with John McCain...
We're moving into the current stuff.
To the current stuff.
Yeah.
So, here's the thing about John McCain. I believe that, you know, John was a war hero. John
Western,
did.
Like,
John, yes.
Bigger than that. Like, I mean, he did shit that most niggas would check, would have tapped out.
Yeah, he's a war hero.
Do people know that story?
I feel like it's always been part of his narrative
that,
you know, John was taken captive. He got shot down. He was taken captive by the Viet Cong.
Yeah, Viet Cong.
By the Viet Cong. They tortured him mercilessly.
They found out his dad was an admiral.
Right.
So they decided to let him go.
But he wouldn't leave.
Because the Navy bylaws say when there are POWs, the one with the longest time leaves first. It goes in order. Whoever's got the longest time is supposed to leave first.
Right.
And so on and so on and so on. He didn't have the longest time. So he was like, I'm not leaving.
Right.
And skipping the line. Like, you've had people here longer than me. You should let them go.
Right.
They were like, well, fuck you and them.
And,
and kept him and then tortured him. Like, they did, they said, I read some of the shit they did, not just with the arm shit. Yo, they, it's crazy what they did to this guy, man.
And he survived it. And, like, and, you know, has served his country in office. The thing about McCain is a lot of his viewpoints, his policy, his votes, his everything completely fucked up. And as much as Trump has disrespected him, he's voted in favor of support of Trump more often than he has not.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of this administration.
But do you call it a favor of Trump or a favor
in favor of the party. In favor of the party. And I get it. Like, there is a blind loyalty to party. So I say that to say...
that's the issue, though, because it was a blind loyalty party. Now it's shifted to a blind loyalty of Trump, and that's the clash.
Right. But I believe... I'm going to say it this way. I believe that McCain made decisions that to preserve the America he thought was the right America.
Okay, I agree with that.
I believe that a lot of those positions went in direct conflict to the America that is the right America for me.
No question.
Right? But I believe that he was doing what he felt was the right thing for his vision.
Yes.
Right? I don't believe he was an evil man or a cruel man.
No.
I believe he was an old white man. You know, his mama's still living. You know, his mama was calling us all kinds of Negroes and niggas and jigaboos and all kinds of shit. Still alive. His mom's 106. That is fucking crazy.
That's bonkers.
That's crazy.
No shots, but, you know, you don't meet a lot of white folks that last that long.
Word.
But
if they do, I promise you, they mean as shit. They mean as shit, bitch. Word. They not respect.
They want to take it back to 1933.
Yo, if you any darker than a paper bag, they not fucking with you at.
Get out of here.
Like, they will look you up and down and ask you to clean the floor. Like, some shit. So clearly, like, this is what he's coming from. But, you know, he deserves a certain amount of respect and honor. But what I don't like is that, you know, when these figures die, people want us to not talk about
everything.
Yeah, everything. The unpleasantness, the parts we disagree with, the whatever. And we should be able to. It's part of who they were.
Of course.
And it's happening with Aretha, too. People are like, I don't understand why you're celebrating Aretha's shade and her pettiness. Because it was a huge part of who Aretha was.
From Door.
Like, always. It was a massive...
Matter of fact, she was proud of it.
Yeah, like, clearly, right? Yeah. Like, clearly, but Aretha, and it's one thing to celebrate her pettiness, but if we're going to keep it a buck, Aretha was wildly insecure through her entire career. She was very troubled.
Because she wasn't, you know, the classic thin and pretty.
And then she had mommy issues and abandonment issues. And she had kids and the dad issues.
Very intense.
And there was all kind of shit going on. Like, you know, respect the Reverend C.L. Cleveland. But Brother C.L. Cleveland had some shit popping off. What? You know, there's a lot there with her.
Do people realize Aretha Franklin had... People don't realize this. She had two children by the time she was 14.
She had a baby at 12.
That's what I'm saying.
Like
shit was real. And
then married a grown ass man who was a pimp.
And allegedly, the first two children's father was her dad.
They said that, but I think that was disputed. It was a rumor, but it was some dude who went to her high school or something.
It was a rumor.
It was a rumor that it was.
Heard that it was daddy, and I had heard what I.
I've heard.
And I don't want to disparage the queen. I ain't talking about the queen.
There's been a rumor that it was C.L. Franklin, but apparently the rumor was rebuffed, and it was some older dude.
Queen. I bought that up.
Her first husband was like a grown ass. Like when she was 20, her first husband was like a 30-something year old Detroit pimp.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that. But it's part of Aretha. And part of that pain and that soul that you heard in her music was because of all of that.
Yeah, that's why she wrote those songs. Yeah, like, so you know, Do Right Woman. And, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is, that's how she wrote these records. It came from her life.
Yeah. And I Never Loved a Man the Way That I Love You. Like, all that shit.
It's real.
It's her life. And you know it's like, you can't.
The one thing about McCain, just slide back to that. And then we can go into Queen. According to many sources, they said that in the last years of his life, like a lot of people, and maybe we'll get there too if we get that old, he definitely had a lot of regrets about a lot of the things that he did and voted for when he was young, including the Dr. King thing.
Okay, he really he voted against Dr. King Day.
And he really regretted that, like later on, like I was bugging the fuck out.
And he regretted bringing Sarah Palin to national stage.
Totally.
Which there's a straight line between Sarah Palin and Trump, I can never quite forgive him that. Or David Schmidt, who was Steve Schmidt, who was his campaign manager, and now be on MSNBC all the time talking shit about Trump, and I'd be like, my nigga, you did this.
Yeah.
Like, for real. But anyway, yeah.
So you want to just go and get into Queen?
Let's get into Aretha. Yeah.
So, obviously, Queen passed away about a week and a half ago quite 2 weeks. A week and a half ago of cancer.
Pancreatic
cancer. You could see in the last few years when she would make appearances, which wasn't much. You know, she had lost weight, and she looked kind of, you know, thin and drawn in. And the voice obviously wasn't, but even if she was healthy at 76, her voice wasn't going to be what it was at 22. Right. But, regardless of all that, and I tweeted this, in my opinion, and I ain't going to debate you if you don't agree, she's a top five artist of all time.
Oh, absolutely.
Cause I think a lot of people are starting to understand that she wasn't just singing, but she was writing and she was arranging.
And she was playing. And did not read music.
Ever.
And if you watch how she plays the piano, understanding that she didn't read music, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
It's really crazy.
And it could play literally anything. And to me, top three piano player of all time. Like all those riffs on those songs, that's her playing that shit. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like she was. It's unfucking believable. Like, I can't even.
And, you know, I think people overlook the piano playing because there was a point in her career when she became a really big star where when you saw her live performances, you didn't often see her play.
Yeah, she was standing up.
But if you look at her later performances,
she got back on that piano.
She's often playing like that Kennedy Center performance with her doing Natural Woman.
Oh, yeah, for Carole King.
I think part of the reason that Carole King was bugging out was because she wasn't just singing, she was playing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
With a fur coat on.
Purse on the piano.
Yes.
First of all, do y'all know how heavy a fur is? Fur coats are heavy as fuck.
And it's light. It's a television show. Yeah. It's hot.
And not only is it hot, but Aretha hated air conditioning because of fuck with her vocals.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that's part of the reason I think that she always wore her fur because she didn't want to be cold. Like, there's a few singers, like, cold air fucks with your vocal cords. So she, but also, fur coats are wild heavy. You trying to play into all kind of shit. But anyway.
And had Prez crying.
Yeah.
Maybe like just, 4 or 5 lines in.
Yeah, like before she even really got started good, right? So, Aretha was a prolific player, arranger, vocal arranger. There's a clip.
So, with her and her sister?
Well, her and her sister, yeah. When her sister was teaching her.
My sister Carol.
Her sister Carol. When her sister was teaching her.
I forget what song.
What was it?
I can't remember what song it was.
She was teaching her something.
And Carol's doing them church claps.
There's a storm clap, yeah.
I love that clip so much.
But there's a clip that the Grammys pulled all their Aretha footage the morning Aretha died, which was some bullshit. I did a piece for Vox.com.
Why did they pull it?
I guess because they want to hold it for them or something. Yeah. But I did a piece for Vox.com that was like 12 legendary Aretha performances, like from the beginning of her career up into the Kennedy Center Honors, that kind of explain why she's a legend. And the one I wanted to use and I couldn't because the Grammys pulled it between when I delivered my story and when it ran was her first ever Grammy performance when she did Bridge Over Troubled Water, and she's at a Hammond organ.
Oh,
so like
I didn't see that one
for real church. You know what I mean? Like church. Like crazy, you know, and so yeah, Aretha, like you said, top five, not just because of her musicianship and her talent, but just because of the way she shaped soul music. She was, even though there were plenty of artists of her generation who were making the cross from gospel to soul, like Sam Cooke was her idol.
Yeah, she wanted
to model herself out of Sam's career.
Oh, like she like what's it called? She like. Had a crush on him.
And she had a crush on him too. Mm-hmm. But she wanted to do what he did. Like, she wanted to go from the church to pop. Mm-hmm. But she incorporated gospel into soul. Like, I mean, Ray did it. Sam Cooke did it. A few people had done it. But she did it on a much higher level than had ever been done before. Mm-hmm. And just obviously already, like, just what she did for women in soul and all of that. But in terms of her influence on music, in terms of her talent, definitely, I think, top five. And it just makes me sad because we will, like, we'll never see this talent again.
No.
We're never going to see her again. We're never going to see Michael again. We're never going to see Ray Charles again. We're never going to see Prince again. Not just because music has changed, but just because that was an era of creation and shaping and innovating. And there's just not much new that you can do anymore.
Yeah. Those people you just mentioned, along with a bunch of others, again, obviously it wasn't social media, it was internet. So, right. Like, Aretha's up in Detroit, you know, from the time she's an infant, literally, you know, learning all this stuff in church at the knee of, like, Mahalia Jackson and Sarah Cooke and, you know, the Bobby Womack and all these
right.
people. These people she grew up with, like, mm-hmm. playing with, amongst many others. And so she's crafting a sound up in Detroit that's going to eventually be, like, all her own. Prince is in Minneapolis, you know, living with, you know, Andre Simone in the basement, and they right. like they're doing this thing, and they're not having, they're listening to records
right.
to get influences, but the sound that they're crafting from Sly and James and all right. that stuff is still their own thing. Now there's so much access that so much sounds identical,
yeah,
or just a variation of the same thing. Like
right.
everybody now, it's obviously trap. Everybody's like,
right.
it's a variation of trap. You know,
you
get Amigos or somebody that might take it and flip it and in flip a different it. Way. But for the most part, it's
the
a
sound
very
is very universal. And
field.
would you also agree as an A&R? And this is like going to a whole other discussion that maybe we should have separately. But also, I was talking to somebody and they were talking about the difference in being an A&R now that all you have to do is like email files to people. As opposed to, because
you sit there and create.
Because real A&R is becoming a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
And also, so much seems to be now producer-driven by the production rather than by the
totally
vocal
is.
Talent.
Totally it's like, we have artist X, like, who can we get to work on? And, you know, you sit in a meeting and name the top, you know, five, you know, producers at the time.
Right.
But it's like, that's cool, but, like, they're just going to make records that sound like those records that are already
right.
on the radio.
Right.
Also, another thing that's hurting to me, the R&B side of black music is none of the current artists that I can think of, please correct me if I'm wrong, none of them come from church.
No, so
before, everybody came from church.
Yeah, before
Patty,
everybody came from church.
Gladys,
yeah.
Aretha.
Even up to the 90s.
Yeah.
That's
yeah, Jagged Edge, all them niggas
yeah.
are 112, those are church boys.
They're all church boys. The Haleys,
yeah,
clearly.
Jodeci,
you know. Yeah, so even up through the 90s, everybody was coming out of church. And I want to say, like, in the early 2000s, that's when they started drifting off. And there's a bigger conversation there because, you know, the relationship between church and R&B, or gospel and R&B, is cyclical. So, like, gospel influences R&B, but then R&B goes back and influences gospel, and then gospel goes back and influences R&B. But what's been happening is that everything's been kind of getting pared
Crunched.
Down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, now the conversation is happening on the gospel music side is, like, they've got, just like we talk about with R&B, we've gotten away from, like, live musicianship.
Yeah.
And also, it's the same thing with gospel. That's they've gotten away
from... talking about that old hippity
yeah.
hop.
They've gotten away from full
traditional
gospel, and it's more praise and worship. And the difference, for those who don't know, is that gospel music is supposed to pull from scripture.
Yes.
It's supposed to reference scripture.
Mary, don't you eat.
Right. You're supposed to have references
to
scripture of the Bible, which is why it's called gospel. But also, it is it's usually choir backed, which means you
yeah.
have parts and you have sections and you mm-hmm. have some leaders, but a choir is supposed to be like one sound.
And if you're leading, you're doing lead vocals, that means you can blow.
Now that we're more in a praise and worship era, praise and worship is more like a catchphrase that's repetitive
mm-hmm.
over and over again. You don't necessarily have scripture influence. It's just
a
more
lot of
like,
times you don't even have lead vocalists. You
yeah,
just have the choir.
It can just be
kind of
inspirational
mm-hmm.
or whatever. Or you have two or three singers and you don't have a choir.
Yeah.
At all. You know
yeah.
what I mean? So like you take away some
Erica
of the fullness.
Campbell is now that like she has a and
yeah.
you sing, but like you said, you know, you very rarely hear a song Erica and a choir behind her. It's
right.
Like
so you're taking away some of the fullness of sound. You're taking away the musicianship because even with Erica, like, Warren's at the boards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, so it used to be a time, even with producers, Stevie J plays six instruments, grew up in the church. Teddy plays 5 or 6 instruments, grew up in the church. Roddy Jerkins plays 5 or 6 instruments, grew up in the church. Pharrell grew up in the church. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And a lot of people don't know that. Pharrell was a Kojic kid, like, grew up in the church. And a matter of fact, him and Timbaland grew up in the church. Yeah. So some of our best R&B producers always came.
Was church kids.
Out of the church. And we've lost that too.
Yeah, yeah. So she's the epitome of that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? She's the, you know, one of the epitome. There's a couple of Sam Cooke and, you know, but right. She's the epitome of that church kid who you know, kind of, you know, became an international superstar. But, and, you know, for the most part, until the 80s when she started kind of playing with, you know, little, like, Jump to It and some of the more kind of dance stuff produced by Luther. Peace to KMG Kells, who doesn't give Luther his props.
Yeah.
But I read this thing that Billy Preston apparently had written years ago, or said years ago, and they wrote it down, about Aretha. And he, did you see that?
Yeah, he said,
he was like, yeah, like, you know, they give,
like, she can cancel concerts.
Because she was kind of Lauryn Hill.
She was Lauryn Hill.
And for stretch, she would cancel shows.
He was like, she can cancel late. Shows. She cannot show up.
Only
she can
took cash.
Cuss people
for
out.
Shows. You have to give her cash. She, no checks, no, like, where's my money?
Yeah, give me my cash, which is why she always had her purse with her.
Yep.
On the stage. And he said, but when she sits down at that piano,
it feels like doing it.
And feels like doing it. You know exactly why she is who she is.
Yeah, he said she scares the shit out of you because she's so good. I actually got to see her live twice.
Mm-hmm.
I saw her one time ages ago. Okay, so Jackie Robinson, he doesn't have it anymore, but he had an estate up in Connecticut. That's where he lived his later life. Mm-hmm. And his family kept the estate for a while. And then they would do concerts. They would do like a jazz thing every summer on the estate. It was
dope.
And I went up there one summer and she was the headliner.
Okay.
She was late. I never forget. She was late and it was summertime. It was hot as fuck. I didn't know about the vocal thing. Like, now you make sense.
Yeah.
Cause she came out. She had like a hot outfit on, like a jacket or something. I was like, damn, like how she got that on?
Right.
I was born. But now it makes sense. And she was good. And I saw one time, Peace to 98.7 Kiss, they did a Christmas concert. And it was, that was one of the best concerts I ever went to, man. It was all women. Mm-hmm. So it was Gladys,
Shaka,
Patty, Aretha, and I think Diana Ross.
That sounds incredible.
It was retarded. Actually, Aretha did. The best one that night was Gladys.
Sleep on Gladys. Yeah, let me just.
I'm telling you about it. Just side by. If you haven't seen Gladys Night Live, you get a chance to.
Y'all sleep on Aunt Gladys. Gladys, because Gladys and the Pips didn't have as many big hits as everybody else did. People sleep on Gladys. Her vocals are fucking incredible, and she's still in full
still
voice,
killing it.
Wow,
she was astounding, like how
she's
good
she so
was.
She's so good.
But I mean, so I'm glad I got to see Aretha twice, and she was in full diva mode, especially at that Garden show, because all those other women were on the bill.
Right.
She was in full diva mode. You know, and I told the story a few weeks ago about when I saw her at the Grammys at the time with B.B. King.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I'm just sad to see her, you know, obviously to see her die. Like, she was in my life, like most of us, since I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, my mom used to play, you know, Amazing Grace and Young Gifted and Black around the crib all the time. I think I still have that vinyl at the crib, actually. And I'm glad she's getting this homecoming that started 2 days ago.
Well,
and
I mean, clearly this was all her plan, though.
Yeah, and no doubt.
And I said that today.
With the
14-carat
gold casket.
I was like, it is the most old black woman shit I think I've heard recently to not have a will, but to have your homegoing service planned.
For 3 full days.
Down to the last detail, like with outfit changes and
everything.
And like tonight there's a tribute concert tomorrow, but tomorrow's the service and service is going to be a full work.
What time does it start?
The musical prelude starts at 9:30. Service itself starts at 10.
Oh man. And everybody's
there's no
on that
way that shit is going to be over. It's supposed to be over at 3:30. There's no way it's going to be over at 3:30.
And everybody, no they way. Got everybody on that.
They got
on that
everybody bill.
And speaking
on the bill.
Surprised that Prezzo is not speaking because they, you know, him and Michelle and Queen developed a really close relationship.
Right.
You know, you can see you can see clips of them, like little clips of them together. Like he really like revered
I'm
her.
Sure he's gonna.
I think he'll be
I
there. But he's Eric
when,
Holder speaking. But
Eric Holder speaking. I'm also wondering when McCain's official services are.
That's true.
I would hope the McCain family would schedule around. Let me Google that real quick. But his, but he had a public McCain memorial today.
Yeah, but Prez O and
it's supposed to eulogize.
Oh McCain. Yeah, and him and Bush.
Yeah.
So maybe that shit is tomorrow too.
Let me check. I would hope the McCain family wouldn't do that, but
listen. I mean, you know, they're not thinking about it like that. They're just trying to get their services done True. With. So again, you know, peace and love to the Queen.
I'm be watching you tomorrow.
Know, of course, we all are.
Yeah.
And we love you, and you know, we appreciate you. Oh, so I guess you.
Today was the. Sorry.
Well, because Joe Biden spoke today. Was that everything today?
No, that wasn't. I don't think that was everything today. I think today was the. Let me see.
I think this shit might be tomorrow.
Oh, so the memorial service was today in Phoenix, but they seem to be counting it as the funeral. But his burial is.
Oh, maybe they're speaking at the burial.
Oh, two more days of services on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, so the preso might be. But maybe.
Okay. The actual funeral is on Saturday. Tomorrow is the casket is gonna be in state.
I gotta feel like Prezo will be there tomorrow, but maybe he's just not speaking.
Right.
I wanted to also mention just a little sidebar, man. It was something interesting that I've just been catching more and more wave of, and you'll actually probably be able to, not personally, but you know. Since you're, you know, a lady,
oh boy.
Be able to speak about this a little more.
Oh boy.
And no, it's not a bad thing.
Okay.
I've just noticed more and more women, black women, I'm going to say, I guess white gals too. I don't know what the white gals do. Black women of a certain age
mm-hmm.
are really into edibles. Like, I see a lot of, like, you know, 35s and ups. I should say 35, and a lot right. of them take edibles. Not a lot, not like they're doing every day, right. but like you know, people that I kind of don't expect to do it be like, oh yeah, I love, you know, I got the cookies. I'm like, oh shit, word.
I don't
like,
know.
Like is that?
I don't know. If it's a new thing. I think
maybe it's just new to me.
Well, I think what's happening is women are coming. These women that you're talking about, we're at an age where. We don't care. Like, we might want to get high occasionally, but
it's fine with me.
But nobody's trying to be smoking.
That's what it is.
And like, for me, I know that I don't smoke, but I do edibles.
Almost all y'all do edibles. I'm like, right. When the fuck did this happen to anybody doing goddamn edibles?
Well, everybody,
all y'all love them gummies. Y'all love them gummies.
But also, first of all.
And them brownies.
But another y'all love thing them is, edibles are way more accessible, at least in my opinion, than they used to be.
I think they're way more accessible across the board now.
Yeah, they're way more accessible than they used to be. So I guess it feels like I, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have known where to get an edible unless I knew.
Now it ain't none.
Now it's whatever. Like, yeah, have people. So I think there's that. I think that's the fact that they're more accessible. Secondly, it's just so much. Like, you can travel with them. You can do whatever. It's just much easier
than smoking.
It
doesn't fuck your breath up.
Yeah, like, you're good. Like, you could be out wherever and take a gummy.
And it's lit.
It's whatever. So I think it's a combination of those things.
I'm loving it.
People just being at an age where it's like, you just don't. There's just not the same stigma as there is with, like,
it's definitely not.
Smoke.
The marijuana stigma has I've seen in the past few years
right.
with states legalizing it has totally changed. And it's not, it's almost like now, like, you don't do nothing.
Right.
Like, it's almost like, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, yeah, smoking is intense because it's, you say it gets in your clothes, it gets in your hair, it gets in your lips, it gets in your fingertips. But it's messy. But edibles is just like, oh, girl, we went to Essence Fest and we all took edible and went to see Frankie Beverly or whatever. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm loving it. Because I'm meeting women, you know, professional women.
Yeah, I just
who are just like, I'm just like, oh shit, like, okay, that's okay.
It's just not as taboo.
It's definitely not.
It's much more easily accessible. And it's also not expensive.
Yeah. And I mean, women be telling me, oh, I just took edible and I was just like in the house and I cleaned up.
Yeah.
And watch a little TV and fell asleep. I'm like, oh, shit.
I think what's related to this is one of the other things is that anxiety among black women is rising.
True.
Anxiety, you know, depression, like whatever. There's more.
There's a lot going on in the
I think I might have talked about that on here too. Like, I didn't realize how many people suffer from anxiety until Twitter. Because people talk about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it may be like, again, like you said, there's just so much going on in the world. social media in and of, like, digital in and of itself is anxiety inducing because there's so much coming at you all the time.
All day, every day.
So there are also a lot of Black women who use weed self-medicate. Not on a ridiculous point, yeah, but just, you know, like, end of the day, it's Friday night. I need to bring it down.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Saturday, it's,
smooth it out.
It's Saturday night. I'm going to take this edible. I'm going to drink my wine.
I'm going to go sleep.
I'm going to watch Ayanna.
Yeah. Because it's not even on some turn up. It's just like, yeah, no. I just want to mellow out.
Yeah, that's the thing. Most of the women who I've met who have talked about it, it's not a turn up.
Yeah.
And then I took edible and we was lit. I mean, you know, I hear those stories too, but a lot of times, like I said, it's women saying, I took edible and I stayed in the house.
Yeah.
Like, I took edible to chill out. I didn't take edible to, like, go to the club, you know.
I've been not taking the edible, got my hammock. Shout out to Tim. Me and Tim both have the same hammock, portable hammock. I could get in my hammock, listen to music. You get the money.
God bless, man. Shit.
Yeah.
I ain't done no edibles yet. Got me a little vape pen, though. Tug on it sometimes. Mellow me right out. Put on some Travis Scott and not get it cracking. We have to mention this Florida election.
Yes.
With Andrew Gilliam.
Yeah. Shout out to the FAMU Rattlers.
Now, he go to school country cousins of them? They about the same age, aren't they?
Yeah, she actually is a friend.
Does she know him?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're friends.
I'm assuming he's probably in his fraternity.
I don't know if he's Greek.
Most of those guys.
I'm not sure if he's Greek.
They tend to be like guys who like get that deep into politics. They usually are.
Well, no, he's also first generation college, so I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, I'm not sure.
So he won the Democratic nomination in Florida for the governor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's running against this guy, Ron DeSantis, who is like not even fronting about the racism, mm-mm, like right out the door.
Well, he's trying to claim
whatever, fam. Right out the door, he's basically calling him a monkey. He's hitting him. But you know what was wild about the Ron DeSantis quotes was that
it wasn't
even clever.
Yeah,
he was using all the
blatant monkey it up.
Monkey it up. He's very articulate.
Yeah,
he's a good performer. Like, my nigga, like, you're not even trying. You're like, this is as smooth as you are.
Right.
So, like, right away, they've drawn a line in the sand. This Florida's governor's race and the Georgia governor race. Because, like, you know, obviously, the guy was talking here. I was spending a lot of time in Atlanta. So I see those commercials. Stacey Abrams and Jim Kemp, I believe his name is. And I see the commercials. And the Kemp dude, yo, he's in the commercial, like, with a shotgun.
That's insane.
He's like, yeah, I'm hunting and fishing. And
but his people will love that.
And I'm going to be even more of a disruptor than Trump. I'm not, he says in his commercial, I'm not politically correct.
Which his base will love.
Oh, yeah, no, that's how he got the nomination.
Yep.
So these are two, obviously, deep South states that have tons of history in horrific racism, violence towards Black and brown people,
right.
Women, just heinous, you know, histories. And both these states are now at the, what's the word before?
They're in play.
Yeah, they're in play, but they're also just at, like, the line of, are you going to go backwards?
Right.
Or are you going to go forward?
Yeah, yeah.
And that doesn't always, I'm not saying that means, just because, I'm not saying, like, the Black person is the person to move, there has to be a Black person to move you forward.
Right.
But it's really like a hard line in the sand in both of these states. Both of these Black candidates, if they win, will be the first Black governors in both of these states,
right,
in the history of the states.
Both HBCU graduates.
Both HBCU graduates.
Spelman.
Yeah, she went to Spelman. And Andrew went to FAM.
Right.
And it's just like a hard line in the sand. And no matter, you know, there's issues that they're going to address and talk about and all that stuff. But underneath all that shit, it's literally like, you're going to vote for the future
or the past.
That's
because
all
the people running against these candidates are going to campaign on the past.
No question.
Hard
yeah.
body.
Yeah.
And it, so Trump had this dinner of, like, quote unquote evangelical leaders the other day, and apparently said to them, and I quote, if we lose the House in the midterms, we lose everything, or we're close to losing everything.
And it's going to be violence.
Yeah.
And if we lose, they're going to be violent against us. Like, right. like they ain't been shooting us in the street.
Right. Right.
On a regular.
Like, they're not out here fucking separating kids from families and doing all... Because they are trying
to be... Those kids still ain't with their families.
It's craziness.
Sidebar, did you... I don't know if you saw this clip. It was horrible. It was a woman...
when she got her son back and he wouldn't come to her?
He went... That was crazy, yo. She was like, what's wrong with my son?
Yeah, she kept saying, what's wrong with him?
But he doesn't even know who I am.
It was so sad. It was so sad.
Like, what the fuck?
Like, she was distraught. And, you know, somebody pointed out, like, be clear... This is the outcome. This is the intended outcome.
Yes.
Because they want you to be so scared that this is going to happen that you just don't even try to come here. But what people don't understand is that the life these people are escaping is so bad that it's still worth them risking.
Yeah. Because it's like, awful. If you stay, especially if you have girl kids, you stay in certain of these places, they're good chance of them get raped and just, you know, abused. If you have a male child in these places, they're going to be initiated to the gang. There's no way around it, which means they're going to be murdered or murderers. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's you know, so like you said, people are going to try to come here anyway. Now I saw that they're trying to, there's Latin citizens that they're like, nah.
Live on the border. Yeah. And they're like, we don't believe you. People who have, they're basically accusing people who have U.S. birth certificates.
Who served in the army.
Yeah, have U.S. birth certificates. They're like, yeah, we think this is fake.
Yeah. Like, my nigga, like, look at my picture. I was in the Marines.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Right.
Like, so, these two races are very important, obviously, because we want these states in this country to somehow get rid of this fucking piece
there's
of
also
shit.
There's also a guy campaigning against Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is Texas, right?
Beto O'Rourke.
He's white.
Yeah.
But he's incredibly progressive.
Yes.
And Ted Cruz might be in trouble.
No, he is in trouble. Like, Beto's whittled it way down until they get like 2 or 3 points now, and there's still time for it to get even closer.
Yeah.
And funny, I saw the other day Ted Cruz's campaign found some old pictures of Beto. Because I guess when he was he was a teenager in the 90s, he used to play like in band, like kind of like grungy type bands, right? And so they put the pictures up like, you don't want this guy running the state. But the people were like, wait a minute, like he looks mad cool.
Right. Like, it was so crazy. Like, look at this popular guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This popular guy who was in a band in the 90s. Right. And they showed old pictures of old stuff of Ted Cruz when he was young and he was a fucking square asshole.
Yeah.
You know, peace to Andrew Gilliam. We're obviously cheering for you. We're rooting for you.
The one thing about Andrew Gilliam that bothers me is that because Bernie endorsed... Now, he was a Hillary surrogate.
Yes.
He was
trying to pin him to Bernie.
And he was on Hillary's shortlist for VP candidates. But because Bernie endorsed him, now they're trying to make it like he's a Bernie candidate. Fuck out of here. Gilliam won because of black people.
Absolutely. I can't wait...
Not because of Bernie.
...to both of these first debates.
Yeah.
It's going to be dope. Have you been keeping up with, this is in politics, keeping up with
Cynthia
and Cuomo? They had their first debate last night.
I was watching comments from it.
Okay.
But I noticed that the media is doing the same shit that Cynthia, they did to Hillary, which was Cuomo was about to blow his top, and Cynthia was being stern in her responses, but Cynthia's getting billed as like the angry woman.
She's mean, yeah.
Yeah, which is like, come on, y'all, enough of the bullshit.
Yeah, because she won't just, you know, cave and
but
be like...
But apparently she really held it down.
I'm sure she did. I mean, she's not going to be scared on TV.
Yeah, and her answers were really thorough, especially regarding like the legalization of marijuana, you know, stuff like that. But she definitely got Andrew on the ropes, because I told somebody else this. I don't remember ever seeing Cuomo ads, and I've been seeing them
a lot.
I don't remember ever seeing the motherfucker been governor how long?
Forever.
I don't remember ever seeing Andrew Cuomo ads.
Now it's kind of ads him like with black kids and all kind of shit.
Healthcare, women's rights,
Back to Andrew Gilliam. I've been wanting to just mention this. Apparently the guy he beat spent $19 million on his campaign. Andrew had spent $6 million.
Yep.
But what's going to happen in Florida, which is why I think Andrew, Stacey Abrams, that's going to be tough. I mean, it's not impossible because she's this far, but the thing that Florida has that Georgia doesn't have yet is I think Andrew really got over the hump because all those kids got behind him.
Okay. The kids from Parkland.
Parkland. They've been, really keeping the campaign thing up, like, yeah, since that happened. They didn't stop.
Because Moms Against Guns. There's some kind of organization that's specifically about gun reform.
Okay.
That endorsed him. Okay. As a candidate. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that youth movement in Florida is what carried him, which is why he was able to overcome the other candidate spending all that money.
Yeah.
And so now that he's gotten the nomination, I'm assuming, like, you know, David Hogg and the rest of his squad are going to feel even more emboldened to turn it up even more. So I think that's his kind of ace card. It's like he's got those 18-year-old, 19-year-old voters.
Well, he's got that, but also, like, for real, that FAMU network.
Oh, that's it's strong.
Crazy.
FAMU is the only network I see that, you know, that really is equal to Howard's.
Well, FAMU has the largest body of graduates.
Oh, alum. I didn't know that.
It's like it's the most alum out here in the world.
Wow, I know they loud and proud too.
They, like, Rattler is like a fucking gang.
Yeah,
but when it comes to, like, getting some shit done,
they get it popping.
They get it fucking popping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they've been hustling. Yeah.
I wonder if Will Packer will get involved in some kind of way or something. But right. It's a piece of them. Did you watch the shop?
No.
Okay, so I wish bro was here, man. So
yeah, y'all need to say that.
Yeah, I'm gonna mention, because it's a series. So okay. We can talk about the different. So The Shop is a show that's on HBO. It's the first episode was this week. I guess it was Sunday night. It was Sunday night. It's produced by LeBron, Maverick Carter, and his squad. Mm-hmm. And the premise of it is they're in a barbershop, legit. Right. Like, dudes is getting haircuts. Right, you know what they're talking. Right. And so, it's against LeBron, it's Maverick, and there's a rotating cast of people. So next week, it'll be other people in this. So this week, it was Michael Bennett, who's a professional all-pro football player, Vince Staples, Snoop Dogg, John Stewart, Candace Parker, who's a all-star WNBA player, and I feel like there's somebody else I'm missing. Oh, Draymond Green.
Okay.
So, and they're just talking, like, they talking, like, for lack of a better term, like, nigga shit. Like, they really just talking about, you know, but, like, there's a lot of funny shit, too. But they also are talking about, you know, the plight of being a black man or a black person, I should say, because Candace obviously has her stances, too. And she was actually very, very impressive. A black person in America. And now they're, like, looking at it, like, okay, we're, you know, the one, oh, and Odell Beckham, too. He was okay. So, like, we're the 1% of black people that, you know, athletes that have made it professionally. And, you know, everybody here has made, you know, a substantial amount of money.
Right.
And so what does that mean?
Right.
As a black person in America. And LeBron is really, like, first of all, like, I mean, when I say nigga shit, like,
like real shop talk.
Like, yo, my nigga. Like, but they talking like that.
Yeah.
Yo, do you see this nigga here? Like, they talking like that, right? So, LeBron's basically in a space now. He's like, look, he's in a space that we kind of wish we thought Kanye was going to be. He's like, look, I got all this bread. I've won my championships. And I don't really give a fuck no more.
Right.
Like, I'm doing my thing. If I lose a couple endorsements, so be it.
Right.
But I'm really here to try to put things out to help my community.
Right.
Hence building the school. Right. Although he didn't even talk about the school because, like, it was taped before that happened. Right. But, like, that's him and Maverick, their overall tone is like FUBU.
Well, I'm going to pause and say the reason that Kanye is not there is because Kanye is in debt.
Well, that too. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't want to make this about finances.
I know what you mean, but LeBron's in a position where, like,
yeah, financially, he's good. Yeah, because I think last time I heard, which is recently, I think he's up to like $450.
LeBron probably don't even touch his NBA salary.
He probably be forgetting that just checks. He'd be probably forgetting them checks.
He's probably a bank account he ain't looked at in fucking however many years.
Yeah, like, what? Oh, what? So, but they really talking like really. I really enjoyed it. You know, bro said he didn't enjoy it as much as me. We'll get into it next week.
I see Jason Whitlock brought his coon ass up out the ground.
I figured I knew it would be one.
Yeah,
and he's the prime candidate,
of course,
to be the one to be like, I don't even go to barbershops where they talk like that. And
which tells me you don't go to a black barbershop.
You're lying.
Yeah.
You think you're from Kansas City. You try to tell me that they don't talk like that in the barbershop. You are goddamn lying.
Right.
Like, you just, you will do anything to stay on that white man's good side.
Yes.
Like, take a show like this.
Which about it made him a Kobe fan. But
Kobe might fuck around and end up on the show.
Yeah.
And he'll be talking nigga shit.
Yeah.
Like, what do you talk? Like, man.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Fuck Whitlock. He's a piece of shit. But I really enjoyed the show. I look forward to the next episode. Like, I don't know who's going to be on the next one. But, and, you know, peace to Jon Stewart because he, you know, it was nigga shit. You know, of course, he didn't say nigga. He didn't even really curse. But, like, a little bit. But, like, he held his own in the conversation. And he also was like, he asked some very interesting questions, not on some condescending shit, just on some like, you know, just like, you know, as a, you know, a white man in the shop, like, he was like, yo, this is really how the barbershop is all the time?
Right.
Like, it's really what y'all do? And they was like, yeah, like, this is what it is. And right. He was like, I hate to tell you, man, but white people are going to start coming to your barbershop because they want to get involved with this. So he, right. He was moving like that. You know what I'm saying? He was very comfortable in there. Like he was dope. He was super dope. So I highly recommend the show. If people haven't seen it, you know, on demand it and watch it. Now, what I haven't seen, I'm about 4 or 5, like you behind on Queen Sugar. I'm about 4 or 5 episodes behind on Power.
I don't watch Power.
Okay. But it looks like Power's going crazy.
Really? Because I feel like people are over it.
No, apparently, I mean, it's not a spoiler, but I guess they killed 50 Cent's character Sunday.
But we knew that was coming, didn't we?
I don't think people thought he was going to die. And apparently, he got killed by Ghost's son.
I thought we knew he was getting off the show in some way, shape,
form. Yeah, so Ghost's son killed him. Like, it's an uproar. So I got to catch up on Power. Let's, I want to see if there's anything. Oh, do you want to just mention Aaliyah? Her anniversary of her
passing. Yeah, I mean, passing. It was the anniversary of her passing, and there was the whole where would Aaliyah be argument.
Yeah.
Which I hate so much.
Because,
they do it all the time. They do it with Pac, they do it with Aaliyh.
Yeah, Biggie.
They do it with Biggie. Except with Biggie, Jay-Z is as big as he is. Is like, motherfucker, we don't know. Like, Jay occupied his own space, and we're also never gonna know.
Yeah.
Jay still doesn't occupy big space to me.
No, he doesn't.
Like, it's very
He's got different. His own space.
He's got his own space.
And, you know, who knows if Biggie...
I also don't feel like Biggie was gonna keep rapping that long.
No, I know for sure, because during that era, I haven't seen him in a long time, by the way, but during that era, me and Un... We got kind of close. Like, we used to talk, like, a lot.
He moved to Atlanta or something, didn't he?
And then L.A. or something. Oh, okay. He was doing movies with Latif and Shakira.
Oh, right.
But it was a stretch. Like, me and Un, like, hung out, like, a lot. Like, we were friends. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
come by office, blah, blah, blah. We'd hang out at night. We, like, talked, like, pretty much every day.
Uh-huh.
And he would tell me a lot of stuff, you know. And he told me, like, him and Biggie were definitely going to, you know, that was the plan to do, the Undeers Entertainment.
Right.
Because they were going to really do a label for real.
Right.
And then once he got out of his deal with Puff, the plan was at that time was for Big and Un to link up and start that Brooklyn Mint clothing line.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously sign more artists and, you know, blow up, you know, Kim even bigger. And I think I mentioned here, like, the biggest artist they actually planned to be on at and
was
that C's. He was the... C's was about the... C's was going to be... massive.
Right.
Like, that was their play. He was the golden child.
Right.
He was the one. He was like, I remember Un telling me so much, like, the album's gonna be called All Out. What's it called? All I Want for Christmas is a Fat Bitch. Like, it was gonna be, cause it was gonna be like a comedy kind of thing.
Right.
Like, it was like a whole thing. So, sorry, you know, if the season didn't happen that way, but definitely, we don't know what Big would have been. But I know the plan wasn't for him to just, like, rap for 8 albums. That was not his plan.
Yeah, no, I don't think Big would have still been out here rapping and fuck. Like, I don't think he would have gone like
that. He'd have been executive.
Because I think as much as Big loved it, I just don't think it was the same.
Yeah.
I just don't think it was the same. And I mean, I'm talking shit, but. I mean, whatever. But anyway.
And also Michael's anniversary of Michael's
birthday. Michael's birthday. Michael's birthday was yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
I'm trying to think. There was something else. I feel like there was something else.
Well, there's a whole special, too, about the 28th of August, right? Where a lot of things happen on the...
That was A Day in the Life of a People, which Ava did, which... did, was it on OWN? Is it, has it,
I think it is on. I think it is on OWN.
So there's that special, which I missed and I meant to watch and I need to see if it's on demand.
I'm sure it is.
So I'm trying to think, what else happened? So there was that. So the Aaliyah, and Aaliyah thing, it's like, it's just tiring, guys. We don't know. Like, she's been dead for 17 years.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I always do say, because people are like, oh, some people, I do say this. It's tragic because the Aaliyah album, which she died at the beginning of promo for, was like her coming of age album.
Yeah.
It was like her, I'm fucking grown. I'm here. It's real. Like, it was that album.
It was a great album.
It was a great album. She didn't even get to promote it. Like, she never even did Rock the Boat Live. She never really got to promote it. And it disappoints me because we can't, we just, because we don't know. But as is normal with all people who die young, you know, we damn near deify them. Like, we idealize them and it becomes legend and lore.
Because every picture you see them, they're young and
beautiful. They're young and beautiful and you know, they died at their height. Mm-hmm. So there is no
climb. Or sometime on their ascent, they weren't even at the height yet.
You know? Whereas, for example, you know, our greats who are still here, like Al Green is still the fuck alive.
Ron Isley. Ron Isley's singing tomorrow.
Ron Isley is still
here. Singing at the service tomorrow.
Ron Isley is still
Shaka
here.
Shaka Khan's still here.
Shaka's still here. Shit, we had Curtis around for a long time.
Yeah.
And didn't appreciate him.
Yep.
You know, so it's like when our greats are here,
we don't really,
we be like, whatever. But once they die, all of a sudden it's like, oh my God.
Oh my God, I love this music.
Yeah, man. Like.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just wanted to mention that, obviously.
Yeah. Because,
I went to the funeral, right?
The Aaliyah's funeral? Yeah. No, you didn't tell me that. Yeah. I feel like that must have been heavy as hell.
It was. I mean, it was
hot. Oh, was also so the anniversary of Chris's death.
Yeah.
Just passed. I think that was yesterday. Or today.
It's today. Yeah,
shout out to Chris
Lyon. I didn't even post. This is the first year I haven't posted anything yet. I don't know. It's a lot.
I knew because Jess posted.
Yeah, Jessica posted. Yeah, so. Yeah, I remember Leah's service. It was very, very hot that day. You know, of course, it was packed. And it was very heavy. It was not that any funeral service is pleasant, because it's not, but it was really, really, really unpleasant. Like, it was just people just falling out, like breaking down, and it was just bad.
Right.
And I remember Dame, and you know, he was still with Hov and him at the time, so it was the whole Rockefeller's Dame, Jay.
But at the time that she died, Dame was dating her.
Yes. Yeah, it was
his
girl.
But also at the time that Left Eye died, he was dating Left Eye.
No, he wasn't dating Left Eye.
At one point, he was dating Left Eye, though.
Dame? Dame Dash?
Yes.
I didn't know that, but definitely not when they were. Not when she died, but I remember, like, all them being around. Dame didn't break down, but I remember all them just after the service. It was a thing under the church, and you know, where it's like a, you know, room where people could, you know, the repast kind of thing. And I just remember, like, all those guys just kind of standing around Dame, almost just kind of like watching him, like to make sure he good, you know. Bad day. Let's wrap it up with, just want to say RIP to Robin Leach.
Oh yeah. Before the Gram, well, before Cribs.
Before anything.
Before Cribs. Before reality TV. Before the Gram. Before we were all trying to stunt. Before the bling era. Before we were all trying to stunt like these rappers and these celebrities. Like, we knew how they lived through Robin.
But the thing about Robin.
And Robin made it so extra.
He was so extra. And the thing about Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, because, you know, it's been a long time since it's been on, so a lot of people probably never got to see it.
Right.
It wasn't just celebrities. Like, he would go over and stunt with, like, kings and queens.
Right.
Like, in castles and shit, like.
Sultans and shit.
People you never heard of.
Right.
It'd be like.
Oil money and.
Yeah, niggas with helicopters, like, in the 80s. Like, he was showing us, like, oh my God.
Like, yachts and. All kind of craziness.
And it became a thing where, like, these super duper rich. I think I read a thing when initially it was tough because they didn't want to be seen. But then once he got the first few shows off.
They wanted to
be on it. It was like, hold on. You ain't going to do me? You did this motherfucker? You ain't going to do me?
And it wasn't just, like, rich people. This was wealthy people.
But this is, like, dumb money. Like,
yeah.
Like my grandfather 5 times ago was a millionaire.
Right.
Like my money, I can't even count my shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you got ski chalets and fucking, you know, Caribbean homes and,
yeah.
You know, your yacht.
On the yacht, like, popping bottles in the age, like, or drinking, you know, caviar, you know, the best caviar, the best lobster, like, diving off the yacht, like.
It wasn't no celebrities that just like us shit. It was all like excess opulence.
It was like let me show you how to stunt for real. Yeah. Like, I honestly think that type of show could work now.
Well, I don't know. The reason I don't know if it could work is because now that stuff isn't as alien to us. Like, now you see it on, like, it's like rich kids on Instagram. You know what I mean? It's just, you can see it other ways. And you know, you got, we go to Dubai and do shit. Like normal niggas wasn't going to fucking Dubai.
Normally, it wasn't even the States.
Yeah.
Maybe to the Bahamas or the Key
West. Like, you had to have, like travel was a for real luxury still.
Yeah. To go to Europe was a real luxury. Like, that
shit was expensive. Yeah, like, the only kids who were going to Europe after graduation was, like, your parents had some money, and that was, like, your thing.
Wild paper, yeah. And a lot of times, they would even know people over there. You're going to go stay here or whatever. So, I just want to say peace there, because that show was astounding, like the shit they used to do on that show. Niggas driving race cars, like
it was crazy.
He was living it.
I wonder if it's on YouTube.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. Want to end up with Lauryn Hill?
Oh boy,
because I know you had a lot of comments about this on the Twitter.
We didn't even talk about Robert Glasper, did we? That happened after.
No, we'll put it all together right now.
Yeah.
So Robert Glasper was on the Box in Houston. I think he's from Houston or the area. I'm almost sure he is.
I don't remember.
I'm almost positive he is. And there's the morning show guy. His name is Matt Hatter. He's basically like the Breakfast Club of Houston. Like, everybody goes to his show. So Robert Glass is on his show, and they're doing an interview with him, and they're talking about, you know, just talking shit, like nigga shit. You know what I'm saying? And so the you know, he talks about touring and all the stuff he's doing, because this guy's, a very well accomplished musician.
He is.
Like, he's got Grammys. You know what I'm saying?
He's got Grammys. He's also, the thing about Robert, which is important in context here, is that Robert has been a very sought after session musician.
Forever.
Since like 2000.
Yeah, he's the shit.
And he's worked with
anybody.
The preeminent neo soul artist.
Yeah.
Right before he even became his own artist, and like before he became like before he started doing Robert Glasper Radio, Black Radio, he already like was one of the leading session musicians in R&B soul, and working in that whole hip hop soul, neo soul, rap and R&B crossover that was happening
in like him the neo soul movement. Like, they're their best friends.
Him and Bilal.
Yep.
He was I want to say he was music director for Bilal. I want to say he was a music director for either Talib or for, what's the other one?
Mos.
Yeah, he was an MD for one of them. He's been part of Maxwell's tour band.
I think he's buddies with Questlove.
Yep. He's been part of Maxwell's tour band. Like,
Terrence Martin,
whole,
all those guys. Like, he's in that world.
He's in that whole world. He's been there.
He ain't a young nigga. He's old.
Right.
But he ain't no 22-year-old. Like, he's a grown man with wife and children. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So they're talking and stuff, and, the subject of Lauryn Hill comes up, and he just brings the heat. Like, yo, like, I work for her. I mean, I think Matt asked him, who's the most difficult artist you work with?
Right.
And he was like, you really want to know? Right. And Matt was like, oh, go on and say it now. He's like, Lauryn Hill. And then he just goes into the stories about how she's, you know, doesn't like people to look at her, and she's firing bands, like literally going from one date to the next, and niggas getting fired.
And they're getting quoted one rate, and then get like being told their salary is being cut by half.
And you
got to
call her Ms. Hill. And,
right. And also, like, something like they wanted him to audition, and he's like,
yeah, he's like, nigga, like, you know who I am.
Like, yeah, like, I don't audition.
Matter of fact, most of these niggas in the band, I taught them.
Right.
Like, what are we doing here? You know what I'm saying?
And he made a comment about her difficulty where he said, you haven't done enough for this.
Which I agree with.
I've
been saying this for 20 years.
Heartily agree with. And so it picked up and went viral.
Yeah, because there's a clip on, you can watch it on YouTube, because the interview was filmed.
But the important thing about it is, like, yeah, it's kind of like when Hannibal made the Cosby joke. Yes, it went viral, but it's not new.
No.
What he's saying was not new. Motherfuckers been saying this shit for 20 years.
Yeah.
Because the miseducation just turned 20 this weekend. Mm-hmm. But motherfuckers been, like, literally the first lawsuit was filed in 1998.
Yeah.
Right? So motherfuckers been saying this for 20 years. So it's not new, but because Robert is Robert, and because there was video, and because it happened right around the anniversary. Because
he wasn't holding back at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, and because it happened right around the anniversary, like, it got traction.
Yeah, of course.
So this was, again, over a week ago. Lauren comes out the other day with this long-ass statement on a personal blog on Medium.
That shit was so long, yo.
It was so long and so rambling, and basically said the same thing a bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
But what Lauren opted to do, and I don't know if this was manipulative on her part or if it was really just her misunderstanding, she only held on to some, she focused on semantics rather than actually addressing what Robert was saying about her. So she really picked everything like, I never said don't look at me, but somebody else might have. I didn't do this for some, oh, if you had to audition, it was because of this. How can you say I've not done enough? I made the album and I've had kids and I've had, it's like, no, that's not what the fuck he was saying. He was talking about your professionalism overall. He was talking about how you treat people overall. And he was talking about the fact that in your career, like, these musicians that you're trying to sun, they've been out there grinding
for 20, 25, 30 years. Yeah.
You did two albums and a fucking unplugged album and bounced.
Did she do two?
Well, I mean, if you count the score, I mean, well, if you count the Fuji, she did three albums.
But she did one.
You did one solo album, and then you did an unplugged album, and you bounced.
Yeah, I put the Fuji's over here because Wyclef has so much.
Right.
So you did that,
and you bounced. And the thing is, like, what really pissed me off about her shit was that she was trying to justify how she treats her musicians by talking about her art and her creativity and about how she's, how she's fighting for justice through her art and how she's out here fighting for voice and how she's fighting. Like, bitch, you ain't made a new song in 20 years. 20. In fucking 16, if you want to count Unplugged, which I don't, which nobody does.
Nobody does.
So it's like, you fighting for justice through your art, but you ain't had nothing new to say.
Nothing.
In 20 years.
You just keep getting these musicians.
You just keep remixing,
flipping these arrangements.
Yeah, like, if you're really so brave and so bold because she's talking about, like, you know, being radical and hard. If you that fucking radical, make some new shit.
Please.
Like, it's not radical for you to find 82 ways to remix everything everything. Exactly. That's not radical.
Exactly. That's
it's
not
the
fly.
Same goddamn show. You can only put so many seasonings in the dish. It's the same dish.
Yep.
It's the same dish. And that's why people are clowning you, like, you sound crazy talking about how you putting other musicians through the ringers for your 20-year-old art.
I've been saying this for a long time, and, you know, lately it seems like people are not coming around to me, but just coming around in general to what I've been saying. Not me specifically, but just the idea of it. But I've been saying this since the 2000s. I mean, at that point, she was totally revered because the album wasn't that old.
Four years old
at that point. And people were still thinking at that point,
there was another one.
And, you know, and look, the album is great. It's not about the album not being great.
It's a great album. It's a genre-defining
album.
Album.
Yeah. It's a cultural shifting album. I get it. It's amazing. But I was working at Epic at the time, so I knew a lot of the people at Columbia in that era. And I remember, like, you know, I'm not going to say no names in the air, but I knew some of the people who were around it and, you know, the rumors and then find out information about how, you know, she didn't produce all that stuff. And the guys who did it, and I knew a couple of those guys, and it was like, yo, we're getting played and blah, blah, blah. So I remember just saying it back then, and then, you know, then the album goes, you know, 3 years old, then 5 years old, then 10 years old, and everybody's like, oh, my God. And I'm like, yeah, but, like, why are y'all still treating this gal that she's fucking Aretha. She made one record.
And the thing about Lauren, and I was saying this to a fan of hers on Twitter, and they were really like, oh shit, you're right. Lauren herself is not that creative, and she's not that innovative, and she adapts to whoever she's around.
Yep.
So, like, with the Fugees, first of all, Lauren's from Jersey. Yeah. Lauren's from Jersey. Where all this West Indian shit? You know what I'm saying? Like, so with the Fugees, she was getting off of Prize and Clef.
Yeah, because of the Haitian stuff.
Then, you know, Erica came before, Erica and D'Angelo and Max came before Lauren, you know, with her solo album. So Neo Soul was already getting established, right? People fuck with her because she was dark skinned with a natural and whatever, and I get that. But like, again, it wasn't new. Like, the vibe wasn't new.
Yeah.
She just did it in a different way. And she wasn't, to me, she wasn't saying anything that was fucking groundbreaking. It was just whatever. And then when she got with Damien, all of a sudden she was fucking Rasta.
Yeah, straight up Rasta.
She has always adapted to who, to actually, let's just keep Rohan. Fuck the niggas. Both, I mean, Rohan. Yeah. She's always adapted to the niggas she's around. Let's just keep it a
buck. Yeah, really.
And it's really. It's not her creative spirit.
Yeah.
It's not.
She just takes it and kind of runs with it.
She takes it and runs with it, but people think it's authentic to her, which I get. I mean, you look at Lauren from, you could just look at Lauren from Sista Act and look at what she became when she became an actual recording artist and tell, like, she was picking it up from somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's, and again, like, she's talented. She has a great voice and she's a great vehicle, but she's not a musician. And I'm sure she wrote on some of that. Like, I had, and I'm not going to blow him up because he hit me in DMs, even though he was kind of retweeting some of what I was saying, but there's a very well-known artist from the Philly soul movement who was like, yo, I wish the fuck I could get my writing credits for that album.
Wow.
Like, very well-known. Like, I really wish I could get my shit off. And he's like, I'm trying not to be messy. Like, people have been asking me for interviews and shit, and I've been declining it, but, like, I'm uncredited on Miseducation.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. That album sold, so I don't know what the tally is at this point, but I think it's like 8 or 9 million. I don't know if it's diamond. It might be diamond. I don't think it's diamond.
It's diamond. I think it might be diamond.
It might be. I mean, it could be. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah,
because
the score went 6. I think it's diamond.
No, the score did 17.
Oh, it did?
17
oh, okay.
million.
Okay.
The score did 17 million. So yeah, it could be diamond, but regardless, yes, a lot of money that people didn't get. You know what I'm saying? Right. And she kind of kept it all for herself and then ran
with
it.
Not only money, but opportunities.
This and is opportunities,
what, this
yeah.
is what people don't understand. Because people said this about Kanye. People would be like, if such and such is the one who really wrote for Kanye and really did this and really did that, they say that about Lauren, then how come those people didn't blow up? Because sometimes you don't get looks until you had looks. Sometimes it takes you being able to say, I did this.
I did that.
To open a door for you. For you to have other opportunities. So, like, do you know how big it would be for you to be able to be like, yo, I produced this song on
yeah,
the score?
I produced Lost Ones or Zion or whatever,
like,
it was.
That open, because even for songwriters, like, before you become sought after, you got to have a couple of hits under your belt.
Of course.
You got to have a couple of hits under your belt. And it's like, if you're not getting the credit for it,
then yeah, and everybody, you know, that was a lot of that was, you know, was also Columbia. You know, I mean,
it was a good story.
Marketing. It was a great story.
It was a good story.
This woman came in there, produced, and wrote this whole album on her own. It's an amazing story. And then she did a couple
and then did
things.
Best
she did. She,
and
yeah,
that.
She did. She did a single for Mary. I can't remember the name of the record now. I actually really liked it. And she did that Roses and Rolls for Rita. But that was still with those guys.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And once that fell apart, you notice she never did anything else again.
Right.
Once those guys, the Newark guys, three boys from Newark, when they left her because of the disputes, Lauren didn't write and produce for nobody after that. So it showed you what was really going on.
And if you got, like, if the internet of today had been around when this album dropped, Lauren's narrative would be completely different. Because again, the guy sued her. It was a story. Like, I reposted a story from
big.
The Los Angeles Times.
It's big.
It was a big story. But at the time, it was a story, even though there were whispers about it, it was a story that was largely contained inside the music industry.
Yeah.
So there's nobody in the music industry who hasn't had this conversation about Lauren. Whether it's about her being difficult, whether it's about the guy suing her, her not having written and produced on that album. And there's a few.
She wrote. No, she did write.
Well, I mean, not having done the majority
of it. Yeah, she wrote her shit, but like, she didn't, but the production, she wasn't doing
that.
Yeah,
not having done the majority of it. And she didn't really address that in her thing to Robert. What she did say was, if you think I stole from your friends, then why did you come in the first place? But she ain't really addressed.
And also, like, and then over the years, I've just watched her just shit on her fans with the lateness or the just no shows.
Like, she canceled her whole reunion tour. I mean, her whole anniversary tour.
Yeah, just canceled it.
Like,
people
whatever.
Go out and buy tickets and, like, she don't show up. She show up 3 hours late.
Right.
She does, you know, sometimes.
Because she got to get her chakras aligned.
Yeah, and sometimes she'll do a 20-minute set and leave.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
And, like, she bounced on the Grammys the other year.
I forgot about
that. She was supposed to perform with Drake.
I totally
and she can't, not Drake, The Weeknd. And she came to soundcheck because I was there. She was at soundcheck. And she left. And I heard PA saying, did y'all let Lauren leave? And that bitch did not come back. For the Grammys.
That's bonkers. You know what I'm saying?
Insane.
And I'm, so,
and The Weeknd flew in out of his pocket.
So, insane. Look, you know, I don't want to be like stomp on Lauren Day, but like now, stop the bullshit, shorty.
Stop the bullshit. And also what we're not going to do is make it seem like people are coming after Lauren because she's a black woman.
No.
Because that's what she was trying to paint it as, like, misogyny. Totally. Yeah. And, oh, I can't do the same thing. Make it do. No, man. You are unprofessional.
She brought up James Brown. But James Brown, you know what? James Brown, and look,
his entire band left him at one point.
Yeah.
They got sick of his shit.
His shit. But also, James is doing 300 shows a year. Right. And he was showing up to do them shows, sometimes with a new band. But that band was tight as fuck. And he one thing about James, with all his faults, and there are many, when he hit that stage, he gave them people what they asked for. True. He was walking out of there like a color sweat. So he wasn't doing that shit like you talking about, Lauren.
Right.
And he was cranking out the records, and he really was writing and producing a lot of that stuff and telling niggas what to do. It's a whole different entity than what
you're
saying.
And let's also talk about, Lauren, that the reason you can't perform your songs, because people are going to see you to see the songs the way they know the songs.
Yeah, they want
to hear. But you can't perform the songs the way they know the songs because you're in dispute with the producer.
Exactly.
That's the whole shit.
That's the whole shit.
That's the whole shit.
Yeah, so when I want to go hear, you know, like Zion or Can It Be All So Simple, like I ain't hearing that. I'm like, what's this shit? This shit's like a soca beat.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? this ain't what I signed up for. So look, God bless her and good luck. You know, with
y'all keep trying to buy Lauren tickets if you motherfucking want.
I would never.
You
just take your money and burn it.
Oh my God, Greg is a huge fan of Lauren Hill, and I was like, babe,
tried to go see her.
The conversation came up, and I was like, if you really want to do this, we can do this. But I highly advise against it.
Because you're gonna lose the money.
Or you're not going to be happy with the show anyway. Because you're not going to hear what you want to hear the way you want to hear.
And she's going to show up dumb late.
Dumb the fuck.
Show started at 9. She's going to show up at 11:30.
Rude.
And be like, and? What's the fucking problem? Yeah, I went and got some chicken. And that's what happened.
Right.
You know, so that's it, man. We're going to wrap it up. Happy summer.
Labor Day.
Bro.
Summer is fucking over. That's crazy.
I'm disgusted, man.
It's going to be Christmas tomorrow. I told you it's going to be Christmas tomorrow.
I didn't get to do a lot of shit this summer, man.
I didn't either.
I didn't get to the beach once. I didn't even get to Central Park this summer. That's my shit.
Did I go to the... I don't think I went to Central Park this summer.
I went to Fort Tryon Park, which is really nice.
It's beautiful up there.
Whoa!
It's like the most... Scorching. It's like it's like best kept secret.
Word!
And there's a section of Fort... I don't know where Cisco had his thing yet, but there's a section of Fort Tryon that overlooks the Hudson.
That's... He's right. It's perfect.
And it's wild on the low. Whoa. It's mad. Like, you could just
the cars chill. Cars riding by on the Henry Hudson, and you can see the water. Yo, Fort Tryon is popping.
Fort Tryon is like...
Yeah.
And there's a whole...
It's like a
There's
museum-y
a whole section
kind
of the Met. Yeah, it's an old monastery. It's an old monastery. You think you're in Europe somewhere.
Yo, that shit's fly.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
And Bette Miller owns a restaurant in the middle of Fort Tryon, too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's dope up there.
Yeah, I'm praying that either Sunday or... You said Sunday's gonna rain. Maybe Monday will be half-ass decent.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna try to hit Central Park. I mean, it's gonna be a normal to hit it, but I'm sad. I'm sad.
Yeah.
I'm sad.
Summer's over.
Summer's done.
And you know, summer in New York holds so much promise that you go into it like, yo, I'm going to do this.
Because there's so much to do.
There's so much to do.
It is. There's a bunch to do. You just can't
get on. It was also just, the weather was never right.
Weather was janky because it would be rainy.
We only had a few weekend days with like really good weather.
It was nice, yeah. A lot of days would be overcast or it would like rain half the day. Yeah. You know,
or just be too hot.
Yeah. Oh, and this last thing, I didn't go, but apparently a piece of the Spike I heard is
BK Love.
I heard
DJ.
It was great this year. Like yeah. I went last year, it was great. I heard he had a bigger crowd even than last year. Last year was flooded.
It was a busy weekend because there was BK Loves MJ, there was Afropunk.
Yeah.
And so they were both happening like at the same time.
And the Drake concerts.
Yeah.
So we're gonna wrap it up.
All right, y'all.
We'll see y'all next week.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast Talk to you next week.